absolutely a fantastic mistake if people want to renegotiate the treaty, because this will be opening a box of Pandora, and we don't know where we're going, in particular in the weaponization of space. So we have to stick to the treaty, but we need to set up a range of rules of the road to make sure that we're still able to exploit our space asset in a sustainable, secure, and safe way. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Our next speaker is Mark Roberts, CBE, Business Development Director, International Defence, Security and Space at Atkins. Sounds like you probably know.
Throughout my career, I've never known what I've talked about. So,
fair enough.
Well, I guess I've faced a problem getting this going now. Well, good afternoon. Thank you very much indeed for the invitation to come and speak. Why am I here? Partly because I'm ill-equipped to say no. Side when he phones up and says, can you come and talk?
So
that's probably my video. But also because I think I've got a little bit of a track record in space security over the years. First of all, the reliance on space. I was a military pilot for a very long time, and I saw us go from not being reliant on space at all to being utterly reliant, rather worryingly reliant if you're a military man. And since I've left the military, well, I left in 2012, I have picked up a sort of business development role. I run a little security team, but I also picked up a business development role looking at space. Right now, I am also the project director for Spaceport One, which is our ambition to get a UK vertical launch space capability going by 2020, and we're still pushing for that that date. So this is pretty important anyway, but it's important to me because I'm going to have to fit into whatever regime exists in terms of good behaviour as we move forward. There are lots of aspects of space security, some of which are being talked about a little bit later on, like food security and so on. I'm going to talk about two principally, which are cyber security and debris. The debris one has already been mentioned a fair amount, but I will try and talk a little bit more about that. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to give you any answers. Probably lawyers don't give you answers anyway, that's what they're paid to do. But I will try and show you perhaps how big a problem is, and it is a big problem, security of space assets. So let's press on. Okay, so what are we talking about? Well, in terms of assets, what I would describe space assets are those listed there. Obviously, the things are on orbit, obviously the ground stations, but also the command and control elements. So there's the soft side of assets. The users, really, really important from the point of view of security, and this is not just space, it's every environment, it's the area that gets missed most, irrespective of the sector. And of course, ever more increasingly important is the security of information, particularly as that information becomes more and more accessible. And there is a drive to make information more and more accessible. So you need to know what it is that you're hanging on to. Threats I would break down into three areas, physical, cyber and debris. Now, debris in this regard is also potentially a physical threat, but when I talk about physical threats, I'm talking more about infrastructure and securing hard facilities. So I'm going to dwell a little bit on cyber and debris. Definitions. Cyber, there have been lots of definitions of cyber, including our own. I think the best definition of cyber I've ever come across is the one there, which was from the Department of Homeland Security. Very early in its existence, actually, it came up with this definition, and I think it says it very nicely, in that it's a bit more than just IP-based manipulation. There's quite a lot. There's behavior aspects to it. There is precisely how you go around delivering attacks. It's quite important to understand this. One of the things that I did very late in my Air Force career was to bring cyber into UK war gaming. And it was a very, very interesting thing to do because at the time, about 2009, it wasn't really being considered terribly seriously in the UK. In fact, I stood up in a presentation somewhat bigger than this, and so this is a real issue in about 2008, and there were people, very senior people, laughing. They aren't laughing now. I wonder why. And the answer to that is it's become more and more in our face. But cyber and our reliance on the security of the cyber of cyberspace is incredibly important. It is particularly important, and I'll come back to this, but it's particularly important in the space domain. Space debris, this is a, there are a number of definitions. This is the most recent one that I could find, which comes out of the ESA space debris brochure, which is essentially fairly straightforward. Okay, cyber. Now, I've done this this sort of presentation on cyber, particularly the cyber threat space, quite a lot over the last 5 years. And one of the things that I used to do and get in terrible trouble about was to relate cyber security of space assets to the Kessler syndrome and to what is described as the day without space. This has emerged from the sort of military world, the day without space. Now, what is interesting to me is I started talking about this in about 2012, and it used to get picked up by the press and played out as MOD experts, as we're all going to have a day without space. I notice now that this is starting to gather a little bit more pace. It's starting to become a little bit more believable. It wasn't original thinking on my part. I have to say I gratuitously stole it from somebody in the US. But actually, it's really important, and it links the day without space, links both to cyber and to space debris. Why is it important? Well, I used to share a stage with a guy from the Metropolitan Police who used to talk about the implications of what would happen if we had no space capability, and particularly timing and navigation capability. And his view was, and I subscribe to this completely, is that rather than being pushed back to the Dark Ages, which is a sort of slightly alarmist view, actually what it does is it pushes it back to about the 1960s. The difficulty will be it could happen incredibly rapidly, and we're not really able to cope with that. And when you look at some of the things upon which we are utterly reliant with space, particularly the parts of your quality of life, like phones, particularly mobile phones, but also landline phones, the ability to get money out of cash machines. These are all things we just take for granted. I have to confess, I walked down from Euston earlier and I got my phone out and I looked at the sat nav to make sure I was in the right, because I stopped at Tavistock Square and I thought this didn't look right. So I got my phone out. It's just completely pervasive. Now I look at it from the point of view of business. Is it a concern for business? Absolutely it's a concern. So losing your ability to do business, particularly now as it's starting to become more reputationally damaging, is a serious issue. So what about the space destruction? I will talk to you very briefly about the Kessler syndrome. Kessler syndrome basically is the concept that if you have objects that collide, the debris that's created by those objects then effectively creates a chain reaction, and you take out an orbital sphere, or more than one orbital sphere. It was proposed a very, very long time ago as an issue. Again, it wasn't taken particularly seriously, and I don't think it's a huge issue now, but the more prevalent that satellites become, the more likely this is to be an issue, and it is now starting to be talked about in the context of space debris specifically. Is it a cyber threat, or is there a cyber threat, and is the threat real? Okay, these are a little bit out of date now. I won't go through each of them individually, but these are all open source occasions where cyber activity has interfered with a function or a mission. I guess the most important ones for me are, and this links to my Kessler syndrome thing, is the 2011 Terra EOS and Landsat hacked. And they were effectively taken over. Well, the hackers had done enough to demonstrate that they could take the satellites over. My articulation of that and my expression of that in terms of the Kessler syndrome is you maneuver. If you're clever enough to maneuver into the orbit of another satellite to create a collision, then you start potentially to create that Kessler syndrome scenario. So what's new about it? Well, in many respects, there's nothing new about it, because we've been talking about it for over 10 years, and longer in certain forums. Certainly in the military world, it's been talking about it for a bit longer than that, across the Atlantic. But at the same time, it is new. It still seems to be new, rather frustratingly. So it is a problem, because we are not really addressing the cyber threat to space. We're getting more and more hardened to as we put new things in space. But we have a real problem with legacy equipment. Some of the satellites were launched in the 1980s that are still functioning. They have power supplies. They are able to be maneuvered. They, of course, were not credible against a modern cyber threat. So it is a problem. We need to understand it. The weapons are not technology, in my opinion. It's the knowledge and skill to wage this sort of warfare. And that is great all the time. And you can get more and more information online about what you need to do. I'll leave the strategic balance element out of it. Very much a sort of military thing, but the drawing of red lines, frankly, doesn't work, as certain government found relatively recently. I will talk a little bit about speed. The speed of this type of attack is a real problem to deal with, and I think that we will inevitably go down the path of automated response. What does that mean from the point of view of the legal situation and rules of engagement? And that takes you all further down the path towards the automation of war, which is a real issue, a real issue. I hear people say that'll never happen. You'll always have a man in the loop. Well, that's great. But your man in the loop may well be a programmer, and the legal implications of what they do in terms of programming. And it needs to be addressed. Not dealing with the speed element of this, or the tempo of potential cyber warfare, means that you'll just not be able to respond. And the other side will get the advantage. Asymmetry, yes, of course it is, and the criticality of a joint approach. I'm going to come back to that, because it links to both. So securing the future, yes, I'm interested in securing the spaceport. So I'm looking at this as a here and now issue for me. I believe the spaceport, this is rather controversial because I don't believe the government aren't quite there at the moment, but I believe a spaceport, or the number of spaceports that we have in the UK, will become very rapidly critical national infrastructure. At the moment, the government's approach is to say this is a commercial lead, it's a commercial activity, and away you go, and actually picks up on some of the science about the outer space treaties, how you manage that. I actually think it will be very quickly critical national infrastructure. We therefore need to secure it in that sort of context. That just shows a building the cyber resilient spaceport. Just shows a very classical sort of approach to security. And that diagram that you can't read at the moment is exactly the same thing. That's the upstream. So that's the bit about getting into orbit. What about the stuff that's on orbit? Well, I think it's the same. You have the same sort of approach. You look at the risks, you look at the threats, you look at your vulnerabilities, and you make some put in place measures to secure it as much as you can. The difference is that you've got to try and look a long way forward, and this is difficult to do because of Moore's law. So it is not straightforward to put something into orbit that's going to have a design life of 25, 30 years and harden it against cyber threats in 25, 30 years. I would struggle to be able to recommend a solution for 5 years, let alone 25, 30 years. But it's important that there is a system of systems approach, because you can have vulnerabilities within your system, but secure the rest of the system, which gives you overall a secure system. And that is the way that we advocate to do it. Cyber resilience, I've talked a little bit about legacy systems. I'll come back to the disclosure and other elements in a sec. Debris, you've seen some of these figures already. It is staggering how much debris there is out there. And if you look at I've got some laser pointer here. If you look at these numbers down here, we're sort of on the verge of discovering, because these are all modelled, we're on the verge of discovering that that is right. That's going to create some very interesting issues for people who are running missions, because at the moment, we're talking about those sorts of numbers, so we actually react, if you like, because we can see those. The objects that are smaller than that, and it's already been mentioned that the new capabilities that the US are introducing, which we will have a part of, is going to discover that there's an awful lot of stuff out there. And it is problematic. Right. Do I have any hope of being able to run these? Let's give it a go. Okay, this is the, it's already been referred to this afternoon. This is a Chinese anti-sat missile test against one of their own satellites. You can't really see it, unfortunately, because of the small screen. It won't increase the sound certainly, but what it does is essentially modeling, showing the modeling for the for this satellite being in case it was hit head on by a Chinese. They obviously did their attack their own out of use satellite, and it was a massive debris field into lower orbit. That blue line you can see there was a part of the ISS, and I'll come back to that in a second. Right, can I now move on? Okay, I don't think this will enlarge either, unfortunately. This is another one that's just been referred to. This is a collision between the Iridium 33 and Cosmos 2251 satellites a few years ago. This Iridium was still in use. The Cosmos was out of use. The Iridium was in a low Earth orbit, essentially a polar orbit, and the Cosmos was in an elliptical orbit. They have come very close many times before, so it wasn't sort of completely out of the blue, but in this particular instance, the maneuvering wasn't done satisfactorily. Unfortunately, because I can't put it on the big screen, it doesn't really play out terribly well. What I will do though is just show you this one, which is, I think, quite frightening. This is the, these are the bits that from those two collisions. These are the bits, now obviously this is diagrammatic, they're not big round blobs as the ISS goes around the planet. But it's just to show that ISS does fly through the debris field from just those two activities. And that's just two of the activities that have happened. There are many more, not quite as catastrophic as those. And the ISS maneuvers relatively regularly to avoid objects that are seen. Obviously, gets hit by objects that are not seen. Any of you who have heard Tim Peake talk about this will know that they experienced that. But it's just to give you a feel for the fact that this is a real problem. And we therefore need to do something about it. Good. So, what do you do about it? Well, removal. There are lots of proposed solutions. ESA's leading on a few of them. But there's a big, big problem here. And that is that whatever you do to go out and grab something or push it away or push it, bring it closer to Earth or whatever it is you try and do, it is effectively a weapon. The US will look at it as a weapon. I think the Russians will probably look at it as a weapon. The Chinese will look at it as a weapon. So it is difficult. Now, this is something we started discussing a few years ago. It is a big problem. And it comes back to behavior, and I'll come back to the sort of good behavior approach in a moment. But it needs these elements. It needs disclosure. And disclosure in this particular part of the the space domain is not that has not been that great. There's elements of disclosure amongst very small communities which are excellent, but there's a sort of broader thing here that we all need to get on board with, particularly now as commercial is becoming more and more prevalent. So I have to say that in terms of our business model for Spaceport One and the Outer Hebrides, there are no government launches associated with us at the moment. It's all commercial. It's all low Earth orbit. And it's all small sats, or small sats up to probably sub 500 kilogram class. So we're going to be playing in this game. The UK is going to be playing the game. We are going to be, and the disclosure elements of that are important. There are technical challenges, obviously, about doing debris removal, and there are challenges around exactly what you are doing to other people's, potentially other people's equipment. Prevention. What I haven't mentioned here is limiting launches. I think it's farcical. I've seen it written, the concept that we might limit launches to limit the amount of debris. I just don't see that happening. Everybody is pushing for more and more launches at the moment, so that doesn't seem to make sense to me. So then we come back to the reason that we're here today, which is talking about treaties. And there are, the OST is littered with articles that you can read around do not do cyber, do not do space debris. All the way through it, you can point to language that says you can't do this, you shouldn't be doing this. But it isn't working, as the last speaker has very eloquently said. So we are, therefore, need to look at other things. Does the International Code of Conduct work? It may. There are signatories to it or those that will seek to make it work, but there are others. It's a big, big problem for the US, for what I think are fairly obvious reasons. So then do you follow the EU approach of the sort of relatively recent responsible behaviour in outer space? I think that's got real potential. But ultimately, it is always going to be difficult trying to get national interests and international interests balanced. But ultimately, from my perspective, this is about, it's the long game, and it's about getting space-faring nations to lead by example. And I think they absolutely have to. Okay, I'm trying to get us back on time. So very quickly, you can design resilience into cyber, as I've talked about, take a systems of systems approach. It needs to be future-looking, look as far out as you possibly can. There are things that you can do. Currently, we can't get, you can't do much with very old satellites, very old equipment, but the new equipment does come with the potential for self-healing and actually intervention by operators. Hardening the infrastructure is starting to happen already, but that's really important, particularly the link between space and Earth. And one of the things that we don't think about very much, and it's starting to appear in the military regimes, is what do you do in a reversionary mode? What happens if you don't have the ability to use PNT? Because you can't just stop doing it because you've lost that capability. Debris, behave responsibly, yes. Yes, obviously, but the point is, if we don't, we're all going to lose out. This is not really discretionary now. We need to be pushing forward with it. We do need to live up to obligations that already exist. Getting satellites off orbit 25 years after their mission, it does happen, but it's not. It doesn't happen all the time, so people do leave debris out there. And I personally believe that we should be putting money into the cleanup. It is not a cheap activity. It's very, very technically demanding. And I'm not sure necessarily that there is a great business case for the private sector doing that at the moment. And then we're into policies, treaties, and law, defining responsibilities and actually sticking to them. And what I would say is it isn't perfect what we have at the moment, but we've got to keep going. We've got to keep trying to make it work. I think that's me done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So, Ryan, before the break is Dr. Sandra Leighton,